So our tour today embarks the journey of the Great Northern Migration, which was the period when the Southern blacks sought new opportunities in Chicago after the Civil War. The journey will lead us through Bronzeville as well as the Quad communities, which is why it is called From Civil War to Civil Rights and Beyond. So now the journey begins. Segregation and racism actually had an upside in Chicago. There were several African-American entrepreneurs who founded businesses in publishing. Robert Abbott founded the Chicago Defender newspaper in 1905. Claude Barnett founded the Associated Negro Press in 1919, which provided a news outlet with a reliable stream of news. In the 1930s, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad published the Final Call newspaper with over a 2.5 million monthly circulation. Also in the 60s, Don L. Lee, who later changed his name to Haki Madhubuti, founded the Third World Press. And also in publishing was John Johnson, who founded the John Harold Johnson, who founded the Johnson Publishing Company in 1942. So we're about to see Johnson Publishing Company, and I just learned a new tidbit of news, thanks to our bus driver, Roger. We are about to see the back parking lot to Johnson Publishing Company. And the reason why Roger pointed that out, because at one time, Johnson Publishing Company was the only black-owned business on Michigan Avenue. However, they did not want the black-owned businesses on Michigan Avenue, so they forced the publishing company to park here in the back. Is it right here? So right here, to your right, is actually the original parking garage of Johnson Publishing Company. And as you can see, that this part of Michigan Avenue is actually named an honorarium of John H. Johnson of Johnson Publishing. We're gonna pull up right in front. As I said before, the tour actually embarks the journey of the Great Northern Migration. However, it didn't start here. I always like to point this out though, because for one, John Johnson actually migrated here with his mother during the Great Northern Migration. He actually started this company by borrowing $500 against his mother's furniture to start the company, which we will actually see the original location of his offices. But I'd just like to tell you a little bit more about what is published here at Johnson Publishing. He first launched the Negro Digest in the 1940s, where First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt actually contributed regularly to the If I Was a Negro column. In 1945, he then launched Ebony Magazine, which became a vehicle for national advertisers to target the black middle class market. Jet, the smaller size magazine, was then launched in 1951. It was pocket-sized and it highlighted African Americans in a social, political, and entertainment, as well as sports arenas. So here lies Johnson Publishing Company. And as I said, it was the first black-owned business on Michigan Avenue. Coming up on your right-hand side at the corner, if you look out the window, I'm sorry, on your left-hand side, if you look out the windows, you will see an installation. It is called Agora, and the artist is Magdalena Abakanowicz. I like to point out this installation just because here is the exact spot of the Illinois Central Railroad Central Station. And if you look at the statues, they remind me of the African Americans getting off the train and beginning their journey here in Chicago to actually look for work. The installation cost $2.5 million and was a gift to the city, with help from comedian actor Robin Williams, who actually is a fan of the artist, and raised money to help the Park District maintain and install the sculpture. So as I said, this corner here at Roosevelt and Michigan marks the spot of the Central Station to the Illinois Central Railroad. It was constructed in 1850 as part of Daniel Burnham's plan. It was the first railroad financed by a major land grant, which was sponsored by the then Senator Stephen Douglas, who we'll learn more about later. 10,000 workers worked to build it between 1850 and 1856. The largest terminal, known as the Central Station, stood here but was demolished in the 1970s. At the beginning of the Civil War, the African-American population here in Chicago was only 1,000. This was after the first settler, Jean-Baptiste DuSable, the first indigenous settler of Chicago, who happened to be a black man. Because of the IC, the Illinois Central Railroad, in 1920, the population swelled to 80,000. Southern blacks learned of the opportunities here because the IC porters would leave copies of Robert Abbott's Defender newspaper on the trains, and they would wind up down in the southern states. The IC is essential to our tour because it was the means of transportation for the Great Northern Migration. In 1988, the IC sold all its commuter lines to the Metropolitan Railroad, or what we know today as the Metro. This area is known as a residential community of the South Loop. But if you notice, there's a whole bunch of redevelopment in this area. This, at one time, was all industrial. It was filled with factories and warehouses. So when the blacks got off the train down at the corner of Roosevelt and Michigan, they walked up practically one block and were able to find work in the warehouses and the factories. The owners of these factories were known as the barons of industry, or some like to call them the robber barons, businessmen who dominated in their industries. Some of the famous barons of industry that were in this area were Philip Armour, who owned Armour Meat Packing, famously known for the famous Armour hot dogs the dogs' kids love to bite; Potter Palmer, who opened Chicago's first luxury hotel, which is down on Monroe Street. The original building burnt down during the Great Fire, only 13 days after it was opened. Marshall Fields, who at one time worked for Potter Palmer, and my favorite, Julian Rosenwald, the founder of Sears, one of the founders of Sears, who was also very significant to the African American community during the Great Migration, and believed that African Americans should be treated fairly. So we actually can't drive any further without actually talking about this house over here to your left. If you look through the trees, you will see the Clark House. The Clark House is Chicago's oldest home. It was built in 1836 and was owned by Henry B. Clark, a wealthy hardware dealer. It is the best surviving example of a Gothic Revival style home because of the columns. It was very fashionable in the early 19th century. After that, it was known as the Widow Clark's House. After he passed away in 1849, it was known as the Widow Clark's House. The house was originally built on land near Michigan Avenue between 16th and 17th Streets. It was then moved to the 4500 block of South Wabash for fear of another fire. The Widow Clark was actually scared that the house would burn down again, so she had the house moved. And then it was then moved to this location in 1977. So this is another building I like to talk about as we pass it. If you look straight ahead or out on your right-hand side, you will see the Second Presbyterian Church. This is another example of the Gothic Revival style architecture. It was built by James Renwick, who also designed New York St. Patrick's Cathedral, as well as the Smithsonian Castle in Washington, D.C. There are over 20 stained glass windows, including some designed by Louis Tiffany, the famed Tiffany Company. They also have a great pancake breakfast that's served there once a month, so if you ever get to check it out, it's usually on a Saturday. Okay, so we are now officially on what is known as Record Row. Unfortunately, you can't see, but behind us was the original VJ Records Company, which was actually the largest black-owned record label until Motown Records. Curtis Mayfield recorded there, and it is said that the Beatles recorded there as well. But over to your right,
are we here yet?
Yeah, over here on your right, you will see the home of Chess Records. You may have seen the movie Cadillac Records or heard of the movie Cadillac Records. Well, that movie was based on Chess Records, which now sits here and is now owned by Willie Dixon. This is a recording studio where many greats have recorded. including Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, John Lee Hooker, Coco Taylor, some of the greats. It was even said that the Rolling Stones actually recorded here as well. Okay, now this actually starts Motor Row. Motor Row, here, back in the day, over 116 different makes of cars were made here. The cars were made and sold here, which is why there are large windows which were used to showcase the cars. Companies like Ford, Buick, Cadillac, Pierce Arrow, Hudson, and the Locomobile. If you look on top, you have to actually walk, but if you look, you can still see some of the old signs that are still on the rooftops. But as you can see, this district is in the process of redevelopment. It will be mixed use with residential living on top as well as entertainment living on the bottom. If you look straight out the front, over or towards your on the right hand side, you will see the old Defender newspaper building. This building is now empty and has been for quite some time. New ownership took over in the year 2000, but has done nothing with the building. The building was originally the Chicago Motor Club building. Its interior was preserved and is in great shape. However, they're not doing anything with the building. If you go online, if you're interested, you can actually see pictures of the interior. There's an in-ground pool down in the basement. There's beautiful mosaic tiling on the walls. It's actually a shame that this building is not being used for anything. However, this was the building where the newspaper, the Defender newspaper, was actually printed and published. And which is, like I said, how the African Americans were notified about coming to Chicago to look for jobs.
What is that? Now on King Drive.
The Defender, the new Defender building is now on Martin Luther King Drive. So this building over here on your right is the Quinn Chapel. Is Quinn Chapel. It houses Chicago's oldest African American congregation, which was formed by 7 individuals as a non-denominational prayer group that met in the house of a member back in 1844. In 1847, the group organized as a congregation of the African Methodist Episcopal Church and named the church for Bishop William Paul Quinn. In the years leading up to the Civil War, the church played as an important role in the city's abolitionist movement. The 1871 Great Fire destroyed the original church, and the congregation met for many years in temporary locations before purchasing this present site. The current structure is designed by architect Henry F. Starbuck and was built in 1892. If you go inside, usually we go inside, but there's a lot of history. Susan B. Anthony spoke here. Both Martin Luther King Jr. and as well as Martin Luther King Sr. both spoke here. If you go inside, they actually have the footprints where they trace Martin Luther King Jr.'s shoes, and they have that on the wall, displayed on the wall. They actually have a Bible inside that was autographed by Abraham Lincoln. If you go up into the sanctuary, the rooftop is made of tin. It was used as a heat conductor back there. So they're actually under renovation, and fortunately they got a lot of grant money to refurbish. But it's a beautiful church, and Reverend Moody will always welcome you and give you a tour. Again, these are all the old factories and warehouses where the African Americans were employed. I think we just passed the original AT&T building, or what was it called out here, Bill? Oh, here it is. What was this? What was it called? Southern Bell? Southern Bell building.
Yeah.
You're actually better than the last bus driver I had. So right here in the middle of the block, unfortunately they're doing some construction, but you see, this is the Velvet Lounge. This is a mecca for jazz music, and this is the only place in Chicago where you can hear live jazz music every single night. It's owned by saxophonist Fred Anderson, who just celebrated his 80th birthday. Actually, I think he's 81 now. And I personally don't think he looks a day over 60. It was an international hotspot at one time. You could find many, many musicians there. He did?
Yeah.
When? Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, Fred Anderson passed away. I'm so
Bernita. He doesn't look a day over 60.
Okay, well, he still doesn't look a day over 60. Oh, wow. That just ruined my day. But anyway, like I said, well, I don't know if you can still hear live jazz there every night of the week, but still go by and, you know, memorialize Fred. So we're coming up on McCormick Place, and I'm sure you guys know what goes on here. It's a very large convention center.
Yeah. The original building was built in '65.
Look at Roger.
And it burned down in '67. I know, but I wasn't worried.
The original building was built in 1966, 65 or 66. And then there was a fire, and this what you see now was built in 1967. But the ironic thing about it was when they originally built it, it was supposed to be fireproof. So if you look straight ahead through the windshield, you will see what we call the gateway to Bronzeville. This sign marks the actual start of the Bronzeville community. For those that don't know, Bronzeville is not actually a legal name here in Chicago. It's what they call a nickname. But we at QCDC and other organizations have actually fought for this area to become the Black Heritage District, or the Black Metropolis Heritage District. This fencing, this red fencing on both sides of the street, the motif is actually the same motif that we will see further on the Victory Monument, which, like I said, we'll see further on. If you go, you can go up. See, I want you to kind of pull by that little sign. But the sign is, it's on both sides of the, it's up on the viaduct as well as on here. So if you look out on your left-hand side, you'll see a guy that's waving hello to you. This is the Great Northern Migration statue. I'm sorry. He actually, he's waving to the north. He's showing you that he came from the south. He's waving to the north. It looks like he's covered with feathers, but it's actually the soles of the black folks that he's wearing, the shoe soles of the black folks. In his bag are the hopes and the dreams of the Southerners as they come into Chicago. This also marks the Walk of Fame. That bench, which is directly across the street, and although we're on a bus, you can't see, but there's a plaque embedded in the ground. This marks a mile and a half long walk that you'll see each plaque on, there's several plaques in the ground on the sidewalks that represent Natives to the Bronzeville community, famous natives to the Bronzeville community, and there's 99 of them.
Okay,
actually,
okay, as those of you may remember, the old Michael Reese site was purchased by the city and was going to be redeveloped as Olympic Village. Of course, that didn't happen. However, the city is going to move forward with redeveloping this property.
Is it going to be a casino?
No.
But if you look right here on the corner, like I said, there's one of the plaques in the ground. But the folks like Ella Fitzgerald, Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, those are the names, the types of names that you would see on the plaques. And there's a bench. There's over 13 benches. The benches are usually at the bus stops, and they were created by different artists. You may have heard of a great church burning down several years ago. Well, that church was here on Martin Luther King Drive. It's over on your left-hand side. And this is the Olivet Baptist Church. I get sad every time I see this church because it's a beautiful, it's magnificent, and there's so much history here. However, they're doing absolutely nothing with the church. Looks like they've cleaned it up, though. It really does. I see flowers. But this church has great significance to the Great Northern Migration. Here is where they actually helped African Americans find places to live here in Bronzeville, as well as find jobs. So like I said, they would get off the train down at Roosevelt in Michigan, or Roosevelt, Indiana, find work over there in Indiana or the Prairie District, and then come up here, stop by Olivet, places like Olivet, because now they needed a place to live, which is what you'll see more of here in Bronzeville. So you may be saying, why is the bus pulling up in front of a funeral home? Right here. This is Griffin Funeral Home. Okay, there's an ironic story about Griffin Funeral Home. Unfortunately, the funeral home is now closed down and is actually for sale. They may have already sold it. But normally, they would be waving some flags there in the middle of the parking lot over that black sort of memorial case. One of the flags would be, of course, the American flag. Another flag would be the POW flag. And then the other flag would actually be a Confederate flag. Now, people say, how can they wave a Confederate flag in the heart of an African-American community? Well, I'll tell you why. If you look over here on this plaque, on this fence, over here on your right-hand side, you'll see that this says Douglas Plaza. It is the site of a Civil War camp, or Civil War Camp Douglas, a POW camp. It was a POW camp that had one of the largest mortality rates of all the POW camps here in the country. But the other ironic thing about Griffin Funeral Home is that when John Griffin purchased this home, he discovered that his own grandfather actually fought in the Civil War on the Confederate side. So therefore, John Griffin is actually allowed to wave the Confederate flag in the heart of an African American community, because that is actually part of his own heritage. People like Jesse Owens, Elijah Muhammad was buried here, Emmett Till was buried here. A lot of famous people came through Griffin Funeral Home. And it's actually sad that it is no longer in existence. Okay, so over here on your left-hand side, there's actually a lot to see. And normally on this tour, we would actually get off the bus and walk around and go inside that building that's over there to your left, which is the Supreme Life Insurance Building. But first over here, right here in this little, I don't know what you call this, medium, in the ground is the Bronzeville neighborhood map. It's a very interesting map, and it marks all the locations, all the spots, birthplaces, anything that ever happened in Bronzeville, and it's true to life. Over here on your right, in the middle, in the medium, or meridium, is the Victory Monument. The Victory Monument is actually a monument dedicated to the 8th Regiment of the National Guard, which was actually an African-American regiment that fought in World War I. And as I said, if you look at the top, you see the motif around the statue. That's that same motif in that red fencing that was back under the viaduct. Now here is the Supreme Life Building, which actually now houses the Bronzeville Visitors Information Center, which is a really cool place. If you go upstairs, again, this is a place that we would get off and go upstairs and see. There's like, there's a gallery upstairs, a historical gallery, and there's also, sometimes he has art displays. There's different displays there. Now I think it's Black Cowboys. But if you ever get a chance, go inside, look around. But this building itself holds a lot of history. As I said, it was the home of the Supreme Life Insurance Company, which is one time was one of the largest black-owned insurance companies in the nation. Also, this was John Johnson, as I mentioned before, Johnson Publishing Company. He did start his publishing company here in this building in a back office when he worked for Earl B. Dickerson, who was actually the first African American to graduate from the University of Chicago School of Law. Well, like I said, if you do come back, you can ask to speak to Harold. He's the CEO of the Bronzeville Visitors Information Center, and you can tell him that QCDC says hi. If you look over on your left-hand side, you will see the Lake Meadows development. Lake Meadows is a 2009 unit development, which is home to predominant African Americans, professionals, teachers, attorneys, physicians who all work in the hospitals nearby or who work in offices downtown. It attracts the black middle class because of its location to downtown. However, there's a 20-year plan to redevelop the Lake Meadows buildings into a mixed-use development, which will bring 7,000 units of housing to the community. They will tear down the existing buildings and rebuild, with 20% of the units coming back as affordable housing. The shopping center will be turned into a town and gown center, meaning combined use with residential units on top and commercial property on the bottom. Now, as I said before, when we were back by Griffin's funeral home, that area started Camp Douglas. Well, Camp Douglas stretched all the way from there, which was 31st Street and Martin Luther King Drive, all the way over to the lake. So we're actually on land that was Camp Douglas land, or land that was owned by Stephen A. Douglas, who donated his land for the POW camp. So if you look in your folders, you will see an old Rand McNally map that actually marks Camp Douglas. So all of this land was owned by Stephen Douglas. It was 35 acres. His estate was called Oakenwall. And we will actually see the rest of his property in a few minutes. So we're gonna stop and then turn around. So over here on your left, you will see the Stephen Douglas tomb. Stephen A. Douglas is actually buried here. A lot of people don't know it because it's hidden in the city, but yes, Stephen Douglas is buried in that tomb. Stephen Douglas was known as the Little Giant because he was short in height and considered a giant in politics. He became a Democratic senator in 1850, and then 8 years later ran against Abraham Lincoln as the Republican candidate and won. This is when they participated in the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates, which was a series of 7 debates where slavery was the main issue. Douglas argued that prohibiting slavery with legislation would bring civil war. Well, it seems as though he was right. This wonderful, magnificent building on your right-hand side is the Old Soldiers' Home. It's also a building that represents the Civil War. The Old Soldiers' Home is Chicago's last building that has a direct association with the Civil War. It was constructed at the edge of Camp Douglas. And during the war, it was a hospital for convalescent soldiers. Following the war, it served as a home for disabled Union Army veterans. The building's earliest sections were designed as an Italianate style by William W. Boyington, the architect of the old water tower. It was bought by the Catholic Archdiocese and it is used as an administration building today. The structure has had several additions since then, but most of them all surround a common light well, which is inside. Directly to the right, out the window, is the 35th Street Pedestrian Bridge, which crosses over Lakeshore Drive. It was part of a project called Building the Drive. An international contest was held by the Chicago Architecture Foundation and the Chicago design firm won. Tang Chicago, with architect John Hillman, who was the principal designer, and Thomas Hepp, the lead architect, their design was chosen because it was simple but pleasing. The project will cost